Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice value packs of T-bone steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5. Then buy one, get one free on select varieties of Entenmann's, Wonder Bread, or Vita Coco Water. All with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger. Fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year to all of our listeners. was that Christmas wind from somebody there?
I was trying to do it.
Welcome to Knife Talk, the podcast for anybody interested in knives, whether you're a maker, collector, whatever you may be. Hosted by myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Momassi of Momassi Fire Arts, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. We welcome you every week. We've actually had 2 weeks off for Christmas, which has been quite nice. But we're back. We're back stronger for 2022. So, guys, how has your holiday been?
Well, it's 3 weeks.
We had 2 weeks off, so it's been 3 weeks since we spoke. Yes, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what happened. I thought we were supposed to have recorded last week.
I don't think so. No.
Oh, okay. Good.
Great. Well, anyway, so that was 2022. We shall see you next year.
Bye, guys.
Mareko, how you doing?
I'm doing good. The holidays were good and low key. Around here, it actually started snowing Christmas Day. In the Pacific Northwest, we don't get white Christmases very often. In fact, I only really can recall maybe two white Christmases, but I'm going to fudge it and say that we probably had four, something around there. But it was beautiful. And unfortunately, it kept us from traveling to go visit family on Christmas Day. We always go down to visit my wife's family down south towards Portland, Oregon, and they were actually going to be getting more snow and freezing, and unfortunately, Western Washington is not really well set up infrastructure-wise for snow, and the geniuses here in our municipalities basically did nothing for the roads. They did no de-icing, no salting. I think between the three municipalities, they got one snowplow. And so they kind of focused on big roundabouts and main intersections, but otherwise gentle curves and straightaways stayed completely snowed over, and it just compacted and snowed and froze, and a little bit of drizzle rain, and then froze again, and it became a fucking mess. But otherwise, we played a lot in the snow while it was snowing those first few days. It was great. And then
good New Year. What did you do for New Year? Anything?
Low key. So New Year is actually my wife's and my first kissiversary. We kissed for the first time on New Year's Day.
Kissiversary.
Yeah. Jeez, so Louise. I'm a sap. I'm a sap. I'm a hopeless romantic, my friend. So we definitely stayed up till New Year's. Had a kiss, and we were like, all right, let's go to fucking bed. So we went straight to sleep.
No foreplay, just straight in.
No. Kiss, we started watching the Wheel of Time series on Amazon. We burned through like 3 or 4 episodes or something like that, and then it was New Year's. Kissed and went to fucking sleep. The life of married couples.
Yeah.
But other than that, things have been pretty standard. Working on knives. They're coming along good. I got some travel coming up in February that I'm really excited about. I just launched my Patreon. So I've been teasing on here the idea of trying to put together courses or trying to figure out a way to get kind of like more in-depth content around my processes and the way I make knives out into the world. And after a lot of deliberation and talking about it, my wife and I decided to do the Patreon. And I know there's a lot of stuff out there on Patreon, and some people have issues with it. Some people love it. But basically, my goal is to just unload everything I know about knife making into this page to build a community where people can come together and help each other, as well as learn from some of the mistakes I've made, as well as the things I've improved upon. And I'm really excited about it. I'm really, really excited, because I think over time, it's going to become a really solid resource for people to come to. Another thing I really like about the Patreon is that it's not going to break anybody's bank. You know, we ask people to support at either a $5 or $15 level, and I think that's pretty manageable for most folks.
I don't know much about Patreon. Is it like a social network where you can share stuff? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a social network, except for but it's also kind of not. It links up with different platforms. Like I started a Discord server, which is kind of a chat server. I'm sure you're probably familiar with it, Craig. But It's like for people who are more familiar with like knife forums and stuff like that. It's kind of like the new form of forums. And also it's basically the same thing as like Yahoo chat rooms from like 15 or 20 years ago. But it's just, again, it's just a place that I wanted to get all the information out there that I got in my head and to build a community around it. And that the reason I want to do it too is because, you know, I've done a lot to share on my Instagram and whatnot, and creating videos and tutorials and stuff like that. But it really takes a lot of time. And my knife making is the only way that, you know, we make money to support ourselves and my family. And anytime I make content, it takes time away from that knife making. I've got to the point where I just can't afford to do it. And I can't afford to, I really, unfortunately, like I share videos from time to time, but I really can't afford to go in depth. You know, a lot of the stuff I share is helpful, but it's also very like scratching the surface. And so with the support of these patrons, I'm able to really kind of go into more of a deep dive and share more of the nuance and trials and tribulations and troubleshooting that I've discovered over time in these various processes, instead of just being like, this is how I S-grind, and then show like, you know, 2 minutes of me S-grind and be like, okay, thanks. You know, we can really dive into it, right? Yeah. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to and really excited about, is to be able to afford to take the time to put that information into the world. But it's going to go to the Patreon page.
Cool.
To those who are paying.
And how will people find, is there a link on your main website to that, or?
There is a link on my website. Probably the easiest way is for people to go to the link in my bio. I actually created a link tree. I feel like I just joined 2022 finally and got a link tree page.
You hit the big time.
I know. I set up a link tree page, but it's kind of a catch-all page for quick links. And so it's right there in the link of my bio. You got the Patreon. I referred to the Amazon store previously. We've got a link to the Amazon store in there too, to calendars, to aprons, all that stuff. So yeah, go to the link in my bio on my Instagram, and that will get you to the Patreon, where I would love to have your support.
Just promise me you won't do one thing.
What's that?
Don't do what that woman did and bottled her farts up and selling her farts.
No, that's your business.
Are you
going to start bottling your shards? Bottling your shards.
Is that why you're afraid? Hey, you think you're stepping on my toes? The fart jarring business.
For those who don't know what we're talking, I've got the page in front of me here. Actually,
why
hit the news? This
because it's funny. You know it's topical, and it's going to go away in a week. Some of these news stories, they don't have a lot of long legs, so we got to get them while we can, otherwise there's no point in going back.
Right.
So this is on Gizmodo. The headline is TikTok star who sells her farts in jars starts selling fart NFTs. So it's just like
what the
ridiculous
fuck?
She calls herself a fartrepreneur, but she wound up in hospital with fart related distress from a high fiber diet.
Do you know,
so I'm just reading this out there,
lots of broccoli and garlic,
I think so. So it says here, Stephanie Matto, who appeared on the reality TV show 90 Day Fiancé and gained a huge following on TikTok, I'm so damn with kids. Tic-tac. Said she had to go to the hospital recently with gastric complications because she was eating so many high-fiber foods to produce more and more farts.
Oh, my God.
She was selling jars of her fart for $1,000 per jar. Mm. And at one point, she was doing 50 a week.
Jesus.
Yeah. She said, I thought I was having a stroke and that these were my final moments. Maddow told the UK's Jam Press about an unexpected trip to the hospital near her home in Connecticut. I was overdoing it. I was working too hard. Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
I feel like I heard somewhere before that men fart on an average of like 7 to 12 farts a day. So I feel like that's a solid
really? An model. Hour for me. An hour.
I'm not Jeez. Surprised. Oh, you're like a golden goose there, Craig. You should keep a jar in these bell jars. You should have like a backpack full of jars and lids.
Don't, I mean, just ready waste, to roll anytime.
Talk about reuse, recycle. I mean, you're yeah. Mr. Fucking No Waste Anything. Come on, just start canning those farts.
Fart in a jar. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? Jeez.
I mean, it is funny. I find the funny part is she thought she was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
But really what it was she was just like eating some stuff and it had literally just had gas.
Yeah, all the high fiber stuff. There's yeah. Let me find this line a set. Where is it? I didn't tell my doctors about the farting in the jar.
Right.
I did tell them about my diet. It was made clear that what I was experiencing wasn't a stroke or a heart attack, but very intense gas pain. I was advised to change my diet and take a gas suppressant medication,
right.
Which has effectively ended my business.
cutting the harvest down, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's called a fart fist, right?
All right, yeah, dilemma time terrible. Already. Fuck the no one care. We're going to go right into a dilemma here.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Immediate dilemma because we don't have a lot of time with this one. You have the opportunity to buy Britney Spears' fart jar. She's starting to sell farts. She might. By the way, that conservatorship. Maybe she should have stuck with that because I don't know what's going on over with her.
She looks a wreck, to be fair.
Let's say Britney Spears is selling jars of fart for $100 a pop. Do you buy a fart jar from Britney Spears for $100?
I mean, that sounds like a sound investment. $100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could be toxic.
Are you buying it or
There's
not?
There's a Britney Spears joke there for you, by the way.
Oh, there you go. I fucking forgot it.
Yeah.
I'm buying it. $100?
Ship me baby one more time.
I am buying...
Oops, I sharted again.
All right, baby. 2022. We're back, baby. We're back. I'm buying $100. I am buying a Britney Spears jar of farts.
Yeah,
I'm not going to smell it. I'll keep it on my table or something like that. I'll have it as a memento.
You taint your investment doing that.
Look at you. You guys are unbelievable. Yeah. It's like one after the other. You guys had a nice couple of weeks off, and it's like firing all cylinders. Just like Britney.
Hey! No, I wouldn't. That's no.
Come on, man.
No.
All right.
Nah, it's not for
me. Mareko, you buying a $100 can of fart?
I mean... $100 these days isn't a lot. I mean, that sounds like a good investment. You buy low, you sell high.
Look right? at you. Patreon is making you a real business person.
I'm just thinking of
I'll
it
wait
like
for the NFT.
Exactly. I was thinking about it like Bitcoin or whatever. Stocks.
Buying things with Britney's farts. No, not for me.
All right.
Jeff, how was your Christmas, by the way? Your New Year and Christmas?
It was highs and lows. The highs were that I spent some really good quality time with my family. The lows are my wife got mandated back to work after, after some vacation time and she's having some time taken away from her because her whole hospital, half the staff is out with coronavirus. So we spent a lot of time doing as much as possible to have a good time, lots of good food. We went to see an amazing Jasper Johns show that was just like, we had such a good time just talking about art and talking about Jasper Johns. My wife is very, very smart when it comes to, I mean, she's not doing fart jokes about Britney Spears, but she can talk about art. So it was a lot of fun. It was a great show, and we just kind of whipped into the city, came back, and we kind of knew that like things are going to get, you know, tight, and things are tight. So it was good. We had a good time. My kid is back at home because the school's closed and she's making do, and, you know, we're going to be fine. But at the same time, it was like, you know, it was nice. We had a lot of nice food. We had a lot of nice jokes, watched some TV, talked to some people, and, you know, it was great. It was positive. Oh, the cool thing was I organized myself really well in December. So the last week I had kind of like 4 days of not having to do any projects that I was like committed to. Mm. So I rehabbed my Peter Wright anvil after talking to Chris Cash, Mount Phillip Metalwork. You guys have been sending me messages. Who are you guys talking about you know, old anvils and old tools? Mount_Phillip_Metalworks. Go follow Chris Cash. He's got everything. So I talked to Chris for a little bit, and then I fixed this Peter Wright up that I mugged these people down the street for over the summer, and it's amazing. And then I made a pair of tongs, and then I made a hammer, and it's actually the best hammer I've ever made by myself. John Sunset Forge blanked me out a piece of 1045, and I punched the hole, and I made this little kick-ass hammer that I'm really happy with. And then I used the hammer and the tongs and the anvil, and I made something to just finish the year off with. And it was kind of neat to make the tools to make the things. And then yesterday, Allison and Tony came up. We had a little Christmas party, went over things, and it was really nice. We had pizza and champagne, which was
a dynamite
combination. And I'm going to give the first tip of the year for us is, if you have the opportunity and the pizza in your area is not good, order a plain pie well done. A cheese pie, plain cheese pie, order it well done. You will not be disappointed. You will make a mediocre pizza way better. Hmm. That's it. And that's all.
I keep meaning to try KFC and champagne. Dave Grohl talks about it in his book. And whenever they do a show, they always get KFC and champagne brought backstage afterwards. And it's that perfect combination of lots of fat.
Right.
And then, you know, the sharpness of the champagne. And, I can taste
David
it now.
David Chang likes a little caviar with the fridge with the KFC. So a little caviar, too. You know, I know you're from Park Avenue, Lockwood, might not mind a little bit of caviar on the legs.
So it'd be
the
Beluga only, obviously. Beluga. Obviously. Yeah.
How was your Christmas and New Year's?
Again, very quiet. And I think, you know, the three of us the same had a quiet one. I think, you know, most of the world had a quiet one. But it was nice. So we're in this, you know, this rental place opposite our new house. Made it as Christmassy as possible for the kids. We had Amy's parents come over for lunch on the day. It was nice. Yeah, the kids, you know, the kids just trash the house. You know, there's cardboard everywhere, their presents everywhere, and train tracks running around the house and all sorts. It was, you know, a proper sort of kids' holiday. Really nice. And New Year, just very, very quiet. We were in bed way before midnight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just, yeah. We've got this deadline where we're, you know, we've got to get this house finished. Our goal is, it was end of January, but now it's the 14th of February, because obviously my wife is going to be dropping soon, so we need to, you know, get this house ready. So, you know, it's been nonstop, me over here, then popping back for, you know, for dinner with the kids and put them to bed, then back over here working. So I'm actually now in our new house doing this podcast for the first time. I'm in the only room that is sealed and warm enough to do this is the kids' ensuite room. So I'm in this tiny room, which is going to be a bathroom. But it works. We've got a very good internet connection here. I'm really lucky. So yeah, we're good.
Very exciting.
But yeah, that was my sort of 2-3 weeks really of Christmas. Just doing a lot of work on a house. It's gone super cold here. We had, like, over Christmas, it was warm. It was T-shirt weather, which is, you know, unheard of. But the last week has just gone Baltic. So it's -6 or -7 now. Yeah, proper cold. But, you know, it is what it is. Days are getting, you know, longer now. That, you know, we're starting to get, you know, lighter days. So, you know, it's all, things are looking up. Things are looking up. It's good.
There you go.
Very nice.
There we go. Shall we listen to one of our sponsors tell us something really cool?
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Do it now. Okay, let's do a question. Just looking at our list here. Sugar Shack Forge with the first question of 2022. Shall I spend my money to insulate my new shop space, which is going to be $5,000 to $10,000, or should I just freeze my balls off for the rest of the winter? How big is that shop space? $5,000 to $10,000 to insulate? Jesus.
Know. I mean, maybe he's like just standing outside.
Yeah.
So it's put up walls.
He needs to
and
build
everything.
A shop.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just standing in the middle of the yard. Maybe I should insulate this place.
$5,000 to $10,000. My God.
I think building materials right now are fucking crazy expensive.
Oh,
I will not be surprised if it was $5,000 to $10,000 just for a tiny ass space.
Jeez.
When I had my little shed, I didn't insulate it because I just felt like it was just not worth it. So I just kind of spent more money on, I had little kerosene heaters, and I had little heaters to keep me warm, and I just kind of went with that until I could figure something out. And my shop now is insulated, but it's not warm unless I run the oil or unless I run the burner. And now I made a little extra money this year, so I got half a tank of oil. And
half a tank of oil. Listen to you.
Dude, listen. That fucking half a tank, I had poor Allison and Tony. Tony turns to Allison, he's like, when you come up, make sure you dress warm. He's like, she says, well, doesn't he have heat? And he's like, yeah, but he doesn't use it. I hold on to a tank of oil for a long time. But it's, and I have a little measuring. I watch how much far it goes down and stuff like that.
Oh,
but
my God.
I would work on getting yourself some, figure out a way to heat yourself, and then work out the $5,000 to $10,000.
Yeah.
That seems a ridiculous amount of money, but it's one of those things, once you do it, you're done for the rest of, you know, for the rest of your life. And I'm at that stage now with my workshop, so the workshop's been sort of built out. And we, just this week, the floor was fitted, so we went with the checker plate flooring. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things. It's a big expense, but once it's done, that's done. You know, it's nothing worse than, you know, for example, the flooring, trying to change the flooring once your shop is up and running, because you've got to strip the whole place out, and it'd be ridiculous. Right. So, yeah, I think if it is a problem, yeah, just get it done and just forget about it then. Sure. It's, you don't got to think about it again.
Mareko, you're usually cold. There's a picture of you like wrapped up like from one of those like refugees in Siberia.
He just wears all his merch. That's all he does. It's
no,
all his merch.
There's like one,
the
like,
hat, the apron, the t-shirts.
There's a picture of you wearing like a coat over, not a coat. It was like a blanket over you.
Yeah.
Like snow in the background.
Right.
How do you manage the cold?
Unfortunately, I don't have a great way to do that. And I think what was key, like, so when I was in Connecticut, there was a giant, you know, the shop was 6,000 square feet. You know, we're not heating the whole shop, and the whole shop is not insulated. What they did, though, was make sure the office space, which was pretty small, it was like maybe, maybe 200 square feet. They made sure that was well insulated and that was heated. And that's honestly, having a place to warm up made such a difference. Even when, you know, when I used to work in Bob Kramer's shop, the warmest place in the whole shop was the bathroom, because that's where he kept the ferric chloride and everything. He wanted to keep it at a specific temperature because it etches more actively at, you know, around 70 degrees, 65, 70 degrees. So even in there, and he also kept the office warm. But if I needed to warm up real quick, I'd go dive into the bathroom and take a quick piss or something like that just to thaw out for a couple minutes before heading back out the shop.
Jar up a quick fart.
Yep. Oh, fucking beat me to it. Good one.
There's a rack of jars in the toilet.
Mareko, where are you going? Well, Bob, I'm about to jar up some farts.
But I think, so my long-term plan is, I do have kind of like an office finish room area here at my shop, and I think it would only take a couple $100 to isolate it and make that kind of my isolated room, whether it's in the summertime trying to stay cool, or if it's in the wintertime trying to stay warm. I think it's better to have just a small space dedicated to staying warm or staying cool rather than the whole space, just because it's just like, he, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to insulate an entire shop. I think it's a little much. So I would just focus on maybe a smaller space, a dedicated smaller space where you, like your bathroom, where you can jar up your farts in warmth and comfort.
Back in the day, in the late 90s, when I had my shop in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, I used to wear we were always cold, and we actually had like a wood burning stove that we would like huddle around. And I actually would wear like a ski mobile outfit with like a Carhartt ski mobile outfit. And if I farted in that thing, it was like, it was a little bit of extra heat in the suit. But now that I have
space suit.
It was like I was legitimately, yeah, it was like, it's like with, you know, with a wetsuit is you get a little water in there and your body warms the water up, and that's how you stay warm. Now that I have a heater, I'm far more efficient in a, and I'm not talking like a balmy 70 something, if I have the place at 62 degrees, I'm far more efficient, and I don't have to wear long johns, and I don't have to wear all the layers, and I'm not like freezing my fingers off, and I'm not wearing. If you're comfortable, you might be more efficient. And I now that I'm at this age, and I'm like, I earned this heat, and I'm gonna fucking use it. I'm way more efficient. I'm way more efficient with in a warm space in the winter.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think that goes further than just being warm. I think if you make your work environment, I think Jeff maybe disagrees with me here, but if you make your work environment comfortable, you're more inclined to want to be there and get stuff done.
No fucking couches, no TVs, none of that bullshit. Just, you know, fucking stand up, no sitting, no treats.
Jesus Christ.
I had the champagne and the pizza in the shop
in 1939.
And the pizza and the champagne, yeah, I was just like, this goes against all my ethical situations. I shouldn't be drinking champagne and fucking eating pizza in the shop. What an outrage.
$5,000 to $10,000, though. Jeez. Tell you what you could do. Get some heat in your shop and save money. You ready for this?
Yeah. Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to
knifetalk.net/heat. And that will take you to Soul Ceramics, who are a distributor of Even Heat. And you'll get $75 off the oven that you choose, which they'll get built for you and get shipped to you with free shipping in the States too. So yeah, knifetalk.net/heat, or just follow the link in the description to the show. You're going to get a little bit of heat in your place, and you're going to save some money. Hey,
and just to follow the whole thing through, I was showing Allison yesterday how we heat treat, and I was using my Even Heat oven. And then after I pulled the last knife out, I kept the door open, and she goes, oh, when it's cold, you can just keep the door open in the Even Heat. And I was just like, oh yeah, God. You sure could. Get that electric bill going. And she was like, oh, exactly. It's so warm here. She was cuddling up to 1,600 degrees of heat. It was ridiculous.
Who wants to take the next?
Oh, I'll take it. This one comes from Tradition Knives. He says, or they ask, are there ways to buy large stabilized pieces of wood, or ways to keep the price of buying stabilized scales down without doing it yourself? What do you guys think? Not doing it yourself, but keeping the price low.
Yeah, large stabilized pieces of wood. If you find like a wood turner, a supplier who, supplies people who turn wood, bowls and that kind of thing. I've seen them quite often have big, big blocks. But that kind of stuff, it really does need to be done well, because stabilizing to get right to the core of that, bigger block is going to take a lot more pressure. So, yeah, try maybe a wood turner's, but don't think about getting huge, huge pieces, because the likelihood is the middle probably isn't going to be stabilized as well as you think it should be.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the only
advice. That's actually something that Toby Morrell over at Toby Fire and Steel does a lot of stabilizing talk, and he says that most people aren't doing it right because we're not, spending enough time doing the stabilizing. And I most likely agree with him in terms of like those big thick ones are probably not the best situation. I actually had some double dyed wood that I thought was going to be red with a little bit of yellow. And then when I cut into it, it was all yellow, and it was very clear that the red didn't go all the way through, didn't penetrate. And I think that you got to be real careful. Like Craig was saying, those big blocks might not be their best move.
Right.
One thing is, and this is not no affiliation with us, but K&G, which is like the gold standard in the United States, you can send them wood and they're going to stabilize it, and they charge by the pound. So like, and when I say by the pound, it's like they weigh it beforehand and then they dry it and then they stabilize it and they weigh it afterwards and then they charge you for the distance, for the difference. Mm. And it isn't crazy. So if you wanted to get stuff stabilized, I mean, they do a great job. So, and I don't know anybody who's has said one bad thing about K&G, but I would probably stay away from big blocks and then slice them down like a pepperoni or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff said exactly basically what I was going to say. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Jarring farts, taking them away from you. Taking the fart jars away from you.
Yeah, I personally would never trust a giant block that has been quote-unquote stabilized. I think the key is sourcing your own material to keep the prices down and then sending it to somebody else. So you'll have to do the sourcing and like breaking down the material yourself, which isn't really that horrible. The really important part is the stabilizing. And I honestly, I have better things to do with my time, and I would more than happily send it to K&G, who has made it their business to create an optimized system for stabilizing. And I, you know, when I was in Dragon's Breath Forge, we would send out medium, I think they were the medium size or large size, flat rate shipping boxes. And, you know, we'd get 60 blocks in there. And if you think about an average block costs around $30 to $40, maybe even $50 nowadays. We were getting that wood stabilized. We broke it down. We got it, sourced it ourselves. We broke it down. We let it just hang out in the shop and dry out. And then we'd box it up and send it out. But after they got back, the average cost after being stabilized was like $5 a block. And that price is fucking hard to beat. Yes, it takes time because you want to do the seasoning properly. You don't want to just rush through that because you'll end up getting some fucking bananas for bananas of wood after the stabilization. And also, K&G actually does a good job making sure like to check the moisture because they won't just take it and stabilize it because it's bad for their system too for excess moisture to be within their kind of stabilizing process. So, but yeah, it takes a little time, but it saves you so much money.
That's a very good point because they're in Arizona, and when I was taught, I originally got wood barrels stabilized from them.
Sure.
And I was trying to figure out what kind of wood material, how do I send the material out? And then I basically made thicker sets of scales, like thicker, way thicker than I was going to use. And then they said that they were just going to put it in their attic. They're like, we're in Arizona. We'll just put it up in the attic and it dries out in a day because it's like so dry out there.
Sure.
And then I made sure that I had enough material that it was like a thick scale. I think each one was probably like, I want to say a little bit less than half an inch thick. And then I could account for any cupping or any kind of bananas. And it was a very, very easy job. And I didn't have a lot of waste. So
that's great.
Yeah, that's the move. It's good. And then professional people will tell you how they want the material. They'll tell you how they want the wood. So,
yeah.
And the other thing is everyone gets a little crazy about the money and stuff like that. But I mean, if you're going to turn it around anyway, I mean, you're going to pay $30 for a block or $30 for a set of scales or $40. I mean, what's the big deal? Just charge them double. You know what I'm saying? There you go.
Okay. Fleetwood Knives. Jeff, you want to do this one?
Hey guys, this is Fleetwood Knives. Hey guys, I have a question. Is it morally wrong to order ready-made Damascus and put your maker's mark on the blade? When you don't make the Damascus yourself, are you currently not capable of doing so? Obviously, most of us don't make their own Damascus steel, but the patterns are a major element of the visual design of the blade. Happy New Year. When I have Damascus made by Bob Rankin, I put my maker's mark on it. But I'm very clear with the customer that I didn't make the Damascus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's key, right? It's just Simple transparency. Yeah.
Yeah. And we all have websites or, you know, socials or whatever. So whenever it's on there, you just mention that, you know. See, I don't think you need to put their maker's mark on it as well, yeah, unless it's a collaboration of sorts. But yeah, make it clear somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, if you get steel from like Damasteel, are you not going to put your maker's mark on it? Of course you are. Does Damasteel need to get their maker's mark put on it? No. Like, it's just a material they make and sell for people to use. And, you know, whoever stabilizes the wood, are they going to get their names laser engraved into the handle material for you to feel good? No, I don't think that's necessary at all. I think transparency is 100%.
I think use that as a selling point, too. Use it as a selling point, because I assume you're not going to the shittiest maker you can find and buying their Damascus. You're going to somebody who you respect and who makes good stuff. So that's a selling point of what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And even going to, you know, as you say, with Damasteel, we all know they make great stuff. But, you know, that's a selling point when you come to list the knife. You know, this is made with Damasteel. And by the way, if you do want to get some Damasteel, you can get 10% off. If you use the promo code KnifeTalk, so when you log into your Damasteel account, make your purchase, use the promo code KnifeTalk, and you'll get 10% off. It's great stuff. Why not?
Smooth.
Yes.
Well, that's a fucking squeaker. Squeaker right in the jar.
Squeak
that one right. Squeak that one right in the jar. Close it up tight. We're done.
It's another $300. Bang.
That's jarred farts all day long, baby. That's the Knife Talk 2022.
Okay, God. Where are we? Do we have any more dilemmas then, Jeff?
We have great dilemmas. We're going to be doing some new bits in the future, guys. If you want to start to send me good news, bad news, I said it and they all be for view. Like, I thought about, like, I'm working out. I'll have an example next week for you guys. But, like, the good news is, and then the bad news is. So, basically, it's almost like a Rorschach test where the first thing that comes to your mind, pros and cons of something, the situation, and we'll do that later. But now we have tough scenarios. You guys sent me some awesome tough scenarios after the all be for review. That we're to answer honestly or phony. And this one, first one comes from Eliuk Knives. Here's a dilemma / question. I just got done making a Bowie knife for a new customer. It was a custom order from months ago. We agreed on the exact blade profile, length, Damascus pattern. This was one of Mareko's Maelstrom patterns. He must be a Patreon guy, by the way. I would hope. He better be a Patreon guy. Just telling you. Just kidding. Everybody relax. Handle material, etc. The person ended up even choosing to have the custom initials etched onto the blade. I had sent the progress for pictures from the moment I started, and they were happy with it all along the way, even to the final glue up. They were happy with the progress pictures. The knife is now 100% finished. They claim to be unhappy with the exact blade profile. They did give a partial deposit on the knife upon ordering, and I'm not sure exactly what to do here. Leaning more towards saying go kick sand if they don't like it, since they approved the blade profile all along. What should we do?
If they've approved it and they've been happy all the way along, they're on the hook for it, surely.
Yeah, but you can't show up to a guy's house with a baseball bat and say pay for the rest of his knife.
No, well, if he doesn't want it, he's lost. In my opinion, he's lost his deposit. Then, if that was the case, 100%. That's what I'd say. But the issue you've got is that you've put his name on the blade.
Yeah.
So it requires, you know, refinishing and all the rest of it. But we talked about this kind of thing before. Give them a deadline and say, look, the knife's yours if you want it. You know, I'll hold it for, you know, a month, 6 weeks or whatever. And if you're not, you know, forthcoming and paying and having it, well, I'll sell it onwards, but you lose your deposit.
This is why terms and conditions are key when you're doing this shit. And just, it doesn't even have to be complicated. And there's stuff out there already that you can kind of use as a template. But it helps avoid this kind of fuckery, or at least give you some sort of support when you're like, okay, cool. Well, these are the terms you agreed to, and you're not following through, and so we're done. And I mean, ultimately, you can decide if you want to give that deposit back, but that's, you spent all that time, you put somebody's name on it, you don't even know if necessarily you're going to be able to turn around and sell it. And so what, are you supposed to be out that time?
Do you think this could be a play by the guy? He just wants a discount now, do you think?
Either discount, or they might be trying to weasel their way out of the fucking commitment.
I think there are bad people out there. I think there are people out there who consistently try to... I think that there are people in this world, number one, always feel the need to have a deal. Like, I know a guy, I've actually talked to another friend of ours about the same guy who, you know, squeezed me and he's squeezing him. And he, there's certain people who behave in this manner. And the hard part is, you know, this isn't just happening to knife makers. This happens to all businesses that aren't like, buy it now and then you get the product. You know, it's like, obviously you can't go to the supermarket and like bring your whole thing and say, you know, I want to only pay for half of it. So you have to figure something out. But there are people out there who are shitty. I mean, they're just like, or maybe something happened. Maybe he had like we had a guy who bought an oyster knife, you know, under $200 oyster knife. And he sent a message to Tony saying, listen, I need to get the money back. I was in a car accident. And Tony says, is oyster knife going to help you? Okay, we'll give you your money back. And he's just like, yeah, he got in a car accident. He wanted his money back. I'm like, for what? But you need two Band-Aids at the hospital? I mean, what is he? People are bad. There's some people who are bad.
Right. And that's crazy to think, like, that customer felt comfortable reaching back out to you and saying, I need my money back. You know, why don't they go back to the fucking electronics store where they bought their TV and return their TV? Or, I mean, it's just amazing to me that somebody thinks they can do that when you basically can't do that anywhere else. And really, you shouldn't be able to do that with custom made work.
You can return things. You can return things
Not because you got in a fucking car accident.
That's why people go to pawn shops. It's not maybe they can't get their TV money back from wherever, but they can, you know, get money back at the pawn shop. Okay. People make decisions and then they don't make good ones sometimes. And then and then all of a sudden, who knows? This guy could have said to this guy, hey, to my wife, hey, listen, look at the knife I just bought. What do you mean the knife you just bought? And like, we're supposed to fix this dishwasher or we're supposed to fix the water heater. And what are you doing? And oh, don't worry, I'll get out of it. You better get out of it. And next thing you know, it's like, you know, sending somebody bondo to cover the name on this fucking knife.
I think a lot of it is we spend a lot of time as not just knife makers, but anybody who sort of makes stuff, trying to sort of tell our story and put extra value into it by doing that. And I think when we're doing that, we're putting across then that we're almost friends of these people, you know, that they seem to know a bit about us because we're trying to tell our story and all the rest of it. So when it then comes to, I can just speak to him, we're good. I can speak to him. I can get a refund or whatever it'll be, you know, because they think they sort of know you kind of thing, because that's what we spend time doing. So maybe that's it. That sort of relationship that we foster creates this kind of mentality where, you know, we're buddies.
But at the same time, this happens all the time. I was talking to somebody who works at a Home Depot, and they basically have an allotted amount that they know is going to get stolen, and they're cool with it. They're cool with how, you know, they know that some of their customers are shitty, or the fact that here's another thing, you know, what contractors do, they'll get all the stuff from Home Depot. They'll do the job and then they'll bring the extra back that they knew that they weren't going to use. That happens all the time. Every contractor I know does that. They buy the goddamn shop up. They finish the job, and then the next day, they have a truckload of stuff that they return. And then it's returned, and they get their money back, and it's restocked. And all of a sudden, they have the parts that they need, but they didn't use them, so they return them. I mean, that shit happens all the time.
Wow. What a scam. I'm sure the bastards working on this house are doing the same thing.
Well, it's not a scam. I mean, it's like, if you're a plumber and you need, like, all the goddamn junction, you know, whatever. This isn't, I'm not Chris Zepp. I don't know the names of your to-the-street junction or whatever the fuck they're called. And you need, like, all these different parts. You can't just go back to the Home Depot every 5 minutes. You just buy the joint. You buy the whole plumbing department up, load the truck up, and then when you're done, you just bring it all back.
But are they billing the customer for this? So then they're taking it back?
No, they're not billing the customer. They're not. Some of them aren't. Okay. But I just know that I've been on jobs with contractors. We're buying I'm like, oh my God, we need all this stuff? How long are we going to be on this job? Like, no. We return the shit that we don't use. So they return it.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Where are we?
I have a good dilemma from Uncle Sam Metalwork. Uncle Sam Metalwork. This is a good one. Here's a dilemma. What lengths would you go through to help a customer hide a purchase? I had someone ask me to send a knife to work. I can see that's that, and it's fine with it. Had one ask to write a letter saying that he won it in a raffle to hide the purchase. What are the lengths you've gone to hide a purchase? Do you know? Do you understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, yeah. I haven't done anything like that myself. Nobody's asked for that kind of thing. But there's a particular guitar shop that I use online when I buy guitars and stuff, and they offer a service where they'll give you like a fake invoice of less amount, you know, so you can show the wife when it arrives.
Well, are you kidding me? That's hilarious.
No, seriously.
So wow. your wife gets the dummy ones?
Exactly, yes. Well, I just to be fair, I don't do this, but they offer this as a service.
Yeah, right. Half off.
Oh, my God.
That is so fucking funny, dude.
Yeah.
God. Because they're going to move those guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's generally guys buying them, and they don't want their wife knowing how much they're spending on these bloody vintage guitars, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but no, it's never happened to me. No customer has ever come to me and said, you know, can you not tell us? You know, you get the occasional, you know, it's a gift, so, you know, can we make sure the invoice is emailed to me rather than, you know, put with the chip and all the rest of it. But not trying to sort of hide the price now.
Interesting.
Have you ever done anything like that, Mareka?
Yeah, I don't think I've knowingly done it, but I've definitely had customers ask to have knives shipped to their place of work. And it never even crossed my mind that they might be trying to like hide the purchase or something like that. But now it makes me wonder. But no, I've never and I honestly don't think I'd feel very comfortable going to any lengths to help them cover it up. I'll ship it wherever they want to ship it, but I'm not writing them a letter of congratulations, you won this in a raffle kind of thing.
Oy. Yeah, that is pretty tricky. That is pretty tricky. It's hilarious. I mean, for me, like anytime I send something to a business, it's always because I think that they're afraid that it's just going to be left on their doorstep.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody's going to be able to accept it. That's a funny question. I don't think I've ever had to do something like that, except for like when I had to do sculpture. When I was sending sculpture as like gifts, I mean, I'm sending this giant box and we had to like send it somewhere else because all of a sudden somebody's like, what the fuck is this? You know, you don't want someone to find out about that if it's a surprise. But I think it's just a funny thing. I would imagine that there probably is. There are a lot of stories out there of people like hiding their purchases from someone. That's funny.
Not to sound like a crazy YouTuber, but any listeners who've got some fun stories, let us know. Stick them in the comments, as they say.
That's funny. That's fun. I was about to say, not to sound like a crazy YouTuber, let's do a anvil restoration video. Oh, boy. I love those guys. Oh, speaking of which, shout out to Chris Cash and the guys at That Works. They did an amazing restoration of a bridge anvil from the Center for Metal Arts. It's definitely a very good, it's not like a flash bang whoop, you know, sword thing. It's a beautiful historic restoration of an anvil. It's really, really cool. So shout out to those guys.
Nice.
This one comes from Walker Knife Company. So I was snow blowing my driveway listening to Knife Talk, and after the most recent episode ended my podcast app, switched to an unfinished episode from 2019. It was number 68 to be exact. It picked off where I left off.
Unfinished? How dare you?
Just keep your trap shut. Keep those farts closed because I'm about to fucking finish up with you. To be exact, it picked up where I left off with Craig talking about how he recently chopped half his finger off. After a bit of moaning, he sadly proclaimed, "My guitar days are over." Yet today, he's a rock star. Which Craig do we believe? Was he just digging for sympathy, or is this new rock and roll life all lies? What's going on with that? What happened to your finger? I remember that.
It actually helps. It actually helps. So it's my index finger of my left hand, which is any guitarist would know, it's your fretting finger, I suppose, on a fretting hand at least. It seemed far worse than it was when it happened. So it took maybe quarter inch off. Yeah, 6-7 millimeters off. And now my finger has almost like a point to it. But where did it sort of come off? So you imagine, you know, an angle taken off the end of your finger.
Right.
That skin now is completely hard. So any guitarist will know you get these like hardened pads on the end of your fingers. I've actually got like a
Your bone. Oh, you're pushing down with your bone, basically.
It's not my bone. It is my finger. It is my finger. But it's there's no feeling to it. It's like hard dead skin, and it's just a bit of a funny shape. But yeah, it doesn't affect playing guitar, thankfully. And if anything, it maybe helps. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Dilemma solved. He has no feeling in his bone.
Yeah. In my nose picker.
That's it on the dilemmas. But you have listener feedback, though, if you wanted that.
Oh, okay. Phone it in.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, this is Knife Talk. Complaints Department, how can I help you?
Hi, this is Dan O'Brien Knives. I just want you to know that the audio quality and the level was spot on with the All Beef review. Keep up the good work and we appreciate the show. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Dan O'Knives. We appreciate the call. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Yeah. He's nice. He also sent me a nice message about the new episode of the Full Blast podcast with Josh Radner, which was a smash success. So,
big celebrity guests.
Dude, I was so tired from that interview because I spent a lot of time preparing. I watch all the goddamn movies, listening to songs, and listening to his interviews, and it was a lot of fun, and it was very interesting hearing him talk about what it's the good and the bad of being on the TV show How I Met Your Mother, and that was kind of neat, and he said some pretty interesting things, and it was actually a lot of fun. But
so what was the deal? You were in college together.
Yeah, we were on the same
same class and
we were in the same dormitory, with different floors, but we had the same friends. And he was a freshman when I was a freshman. And he's a great guy.
So where did it all go wrong for you?
What are you talking? I mean, about 5 minutes ago when I started reading the listener feedback. Clearly, I mean. That time it went wrong when I started.
You were given the same opportunity. What happened to you?
I mean, I didn't realize I could jar my farts, and if it did that in 1996, I'd have been like, "What the podcast? I'm going to do that." I mean, no problem. But he's this great guy, and he was on. It was interesting because I think a lot of people with actors, a lot of people think they're just like found in a mall. This dude like went to college and he got a master's at NYU, and he went to conservatories. And he was a real actor. And he was on Broadway with Kathleen Turner and The Graduate. And he was a real actor. And then he got this part. And, you know, that's what they do. I didn't realize that, like, these actors in New York, they all take turns getting on these, like, you know, Law and Order shows and, these parts. And then he just got this. He'd done a number of pilots. And then he just got on this smash success, and it's the good and the bad of how it's affected him is kind of interesting.
I haven't quite finished. I've listened to most of the show. I haven't finished it yet, but he comes across as a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's a good dude. You know, the thing is I learned a lot about interviewing people, and the key is to make them comfortable. And I wanted to ask questions like, what's it like dating? Was it, you know, dating Marissa Tomei? And I didn't want to fuck the whole thing up and make him pissed. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of make him more interested in blah, blah, blah. All right. So the next question, the next listener feedback is from our friend KLB. KLB is the man. Cheers for another awesome year. Knife Talk is always great to listen to the three of you wackos. Happy holidays. And then John.
It seemed to go down well. The All Beef review seemed to go down well with people, I think.
How much fun was that? How much fun was the All Beef review? Yeah. God damn. I think the first time we did it, I said to you, like, we should do that every 6 months. And you're just like, nope, we're not doing it every 6 months. And you're right. John Conkey says, I want to thank you for, number one, the second to last show of the year. Having all those helpful hints makes me crave for your next show. Getting tidbits to improve and make things faster and better is awesome. Your last show, the All Beef Review, is a blessing. It's good to hear you guys laugh. I have my vacuum, my grinder going while I'm listening to you guys. Thank you. We love you guys, and I have a need to take you guys on our daily adventures, and we love to indulge in your shows, blah, 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 blah. Thank you very much, John, and Merry Christmas to you, too. And nice people had nice things to say. We don't need to write
any bad things this week?
No, I mean, you know, everyone was cool. Even the people who were like, you know, prickish about the audio were like, you know, were cool at the end. They're like, you fixed it. You fixed it. Like, all right. I told you we're going to fix it. So, yeah. So,
okay. Let's go back to a couple of questions then.
Right.
Basil Zervis has said, for new or beginner blade blacksmiths, where do you look to get good anvils and hammers whilst also not breaking the bank? Good anvils and hammers.
Well, hammers aren't expensive. I mean, even the people that we know that make hammers, John Ariani, Cliff Dufton, Ben Snoor, the Center for Metal Arts, they make hammers. We have a lot of friends who make hammers, and I think the Royalty Forge and a couple other guys make hammers. Hilltop. None of them are crazy. Find a hammer that you're going to use for a long, long time, they're not going to go bad. I mean, it's not like buying fish, for Christ's sakes. You know, it's not. You get yourself a good hammer, and then it'll make you enjoy doing it more. You know,
100%.
Yeah.
And then anvils. Anvils. Number one, you just got to keep your eyes open. I hear stories of price per pound, and it just makes me want to.
I had a vision of like Wile E. Coyote then keeping his eyes open because an anvil was going to fall on him from a cliff top or something.
Wile E. Coyote must be like, man. That's Andrew Alexander's Wile E. Coyote. Wile E. Coyote is getting all his anvils from Andrew Alexander because it's unbelievable. But you got to keep your eyes open, and you know, and also don't be a sucker and fall for this price per pound bullshit, because the price per pound, I hear people talk about price per pound. It's not correct. If you have to see the anvil and you have to know what you're looking at and you have to know what you're going to do. Like if you don't need the horn, then don't worry about if the horn's fucked up. You don't have to, you know, it's not a big deal. But if you're going to, I just think that people get a little bit too crazy on price per pound, and it's the anvil is based, it's based on the anvil, not exactly price per pound.
For sure.
Yeah, I hate that shit.
Well, and also, our sponsor, Texas Fairy Supply, actually has their own line of anvils. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at their website right now. It looks like it's about $5 a pound for a 100-pound anvil, which is an investment, but that thing's going to hold its value. It's like just like the hammers that you're talking about. Like, those things are going to... They're going to outlive you. So, I mean, the anvil I have is like 200 years old. So, you just got to take the time, invest well, and it's going to last.
What's the address of that website, Mareko?
It's TexasFarrierSupply.com. And when you go to check out, make sure you throw in Knife Talk 10 to save yourself 10%. As well as when you're buying along with your anvil, get yourself some sandpaper. The best sandpaper in the world. Yeah, the best sandpaper in the world. Jesus
Christ. I mean, come on, man.
I just thought Craig was going to tighten it up because I wasn't planning this. But the best sandpaper for sanding blades especially is Rhino Wet, the red line, made by Endasa USA, which you can also get at Texas Farrier Supply. I almost said Texas Knife Supply. But TexasFarrierSupply.com. Again, when you go to check out, make sure you put in Knife Talk 10 and you'll save yourself 10%.
There we go.
It's hard to beat.
There we go.
And last but not least, stop being so cheap. Everybody with don't break the bank. Get yourself something good and then use it. And otherwise, you're gonna get something cheap and you're not gonna like it. So stop it.
Yeah, makes sense.
I wonder how many
service.
Oh, you did.
Sorry, go on.
I was just gonna say, I wonder how many people have done that. They've like invested in shitty tools, and they start trying to get into knife making or blacksmithing, and they're like, this fucking sucks. This is lame. This is too hard. This is bullshit. When really they're just using the wrong fucking tools or crappy tools to try to get the job done.
I know that Bob Menard from the NEB, the New England Blacksmiths, had found these inexpensive anvils from he brought them to Maker Camp. And they're perfectly usable. I mean, they're perfectly usable, inexpensive anvils. I'm sure you could do that, or you could probably stumble onto one. You know, it's like, but I remember when I got into fly fishing, because I loved fishing in general. And then I was just like, I'm not going to buy the most expensive gear. And I bought the cheap stuff, the beginner, the entry level shit. Mm. And I loved fly fishing so much, but once I got better at it and I got a better set, the first kit I bought, I was like, this thing fucking sucks. I wish I didn't buy it because it, like, it was just almost wasteful. So when you, you know, what is the expression? Make it hurt once or something like that.
Yeah.
What is it? What are these goddamn expressions? Buy once, hurt it twice.
Buy once, hurt once. Yeah. Buy once. Fuck. We all know what we're talking about.
Just fart in a jar. Sell your farts in a jar and get yourself an anvil. It's probably like for you, it might be like 100 fart jars. We'll get you a nice anvil or something.
There we go. If Chris Zepp is selling any anvils, he may accept fart jars as payment.
Yeah, I know those guys.
Message him. He may well do it.
You know those guys are doing NFTs of fart jars. They love it. They love a fart jar. All those guys over at the Handmade Podcast, they accept fart jars for service, for sure.
Okay. Nikos Kalu, I think his name is. I'm making a 1070 Gyutu. I want to do a force patina on it. What grit are you hand sanding before the patina? Thank you. 1070 force patina. I don't do many force patinas because I don't really do many carbon steel knives now. They're virtually all stainless. But what I think a lot of people don't realize is a patina is almost like a moving goalpost. It's not, it's not set and forget. This thing is always changing. So personally, if I were to do one again, I'd hand sand right down as if I wasn't putting a patina on it.
Exactly.
Because that patina isn't a permanent thing. It's like I said, it's a moving goalpost. It's always changing. So start with a good base, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. I would hand sand it as though there wasn't going to be a patina. So probably up to at least a nice solid satin 600 or 800 grit finish before working the patina. I think some people, when they do some sort of coating or patina or something on the surface, they think they get to cheat the finish. But I think that's a bad move. That's not how you get people glowing. You don't get glowing reviews and word of mouth from people being like, I cleaned that fucking patina off and there's bullshit underneath there. So don't stop cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Just finish the knife the way you normally would and then hit the pit with the patina. That's what I do. Always, all the time.
Always. We've got a cross podcast question. I think the next one, Tom Scott has said, your talk with Fingal was awesome, and his worldview is great. I think he's talking about your podcast, Jeff.
Well, which was a great podcast,
but he sort of went into depth in your podcast, which is a great episode, by the way. I loved it. I might as well finish the question there. And it says, it got me thinking, what is it that makes a meal rather than just some food? Is it the people you share it with, the way it's prepared, the tools you use? He said this could be a good discussion. I think he's quite right. When you think of, favorite meals they've had in the past, it's, as Tom says, it's not always, about the food, is it? It's about all these things he's mentioned, the company and the memories that will bring back to you. Have you guys got like a favorite meal that you think back to? Can you remember what the food was, or do you remember where you were and who you were with?
Sure,
probably more than what you'd remember.
I can't think of one exactly, but I know the experiences I've always enjoyed the most is when it's super low key, hanging out either outside in the barbecue or inside the kitchen, sitting there throwing back beers or glasses of wine or whatever, and everybody's hanging out, talking shit or having fun, telling jokes and making food. And those are always the best meals that I've ever shared with people. And then we all sit down, scarf some food, and then hang out and do some more BSing and whatever. But those have been mine. I don't have, like I said, I don't have any specific one, but those are the kind of moments I enjoy the most, for sure.
What about you, Jeff? Any sort of specific memories?
Well, Stephanie Motto's specific memory was right before she went to the hospital for her farts.
That was a final bean casserole that she'll ever have. Yeah.
That was a meal, ladies and gentlemen. That was a meal. Anything that sends you to the hospital, that's a memorable experience. Actually, funny enough, this Christmas and New Year's, we decided to eat differently. And our kitchen and dining room are in the same room. So
did you use your left hands instead of your right hands, like for cutting? Or, you know, when you say eat differently, do you stand on your head?
No, I was serving one dish out at a time. Like, I would cook a dish and we would eat, like, almost like tapas, not everything at the same time. So we were doing, my kid loves the Goodfellas. So we watched Goodfellas, and then I was doing the Feast of the Seven Fishes, which is this Italian thing before Christmas where you cook every different fish or all these different fish. So we were doing like courses, and I was in the kitchen, and then I'd bring out a plate and we would all stop to eat it and watch the movie, and I'd go back to cooking something else. And that was a really fun experience. And they were like, what's coming next? And it was like this really kind of a neat experience. I used to love doing paellas because it becomes this, I mean, for parties, it's just like this, it's this amazing, it's very communal. And the key is when they tell you how to make paella, you have to make sure all your guests are there, and you can't start until everybody's there. And it was like, you have everything prepared and it becomes this fun thing. It's the same thing with grilling. You know, it's this beautiful event where you're sharing kind of community. So,
And there's something about outdoors as well. I mean, those two you mentioned, they're generally going to be outdoors with big gatherings of people. And yeah, it just creates that atmosphere, doesn't it? You know, and you can smell it. You know, when you go back to that memory, you can almost smell it all. And I love it.
I tell you, the best meal I've had in a long, long time was at my last Hammer-In at Mreka. I think you were here for that.
Yeah.
Where I made paella, and then Steve Pellegrino bought these monster steaks. Monster steaks. And then Racer Racks brought all these sausages, and friends were bringing all this food. All these knife makers were bringing all this stuff. And John Ariani brought this giant, just this huge grill that we just had. We were having on one side of the grill, we were making the steaks, and the other side of the grill, we're doing the paella, and everyone was standing around having a good time, and people were hammering, and it was an amazing experience as a group, you know, because it wasn't just like hot dogs and, you know, marshmallows. It was like this real, everyone kind of brought their A game. It was a lot of fun.
That was great.
Steve Pellegrino can cook a fucking steak, ladies and gentlemen. No bullshit. Like a motherfucker. He was tempering it and heating it up, and it was very high professional with him.
How is Steve now? Do you know, have you spoken to him recently?
I had him on the podcast and he's doing okay. I mean, you know, he's doing okay. I think that he says he's stiff, and last we've heard he's stiff, but he's making it happen. He's recently married. Congratulations to Steve. And
that's why he's stiff.
What?
Sorry.
What did you say?
It's a dick innuendo joke, really. But anyway, recently married, you generally stiff a lot. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I got you. There you go. Attaboy.
There we go.
Whatever
the best jokes, the ones where you have to explain them back.
I didn't hear you. If I'd heard you, it would have been fine. But yeah, it was great. You know, that's an experience. You're with people and your friends, and then you're kind of making stuff together. It is really kind of that is communal environment is really great.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one particular. So we were on a Greek island. A friend got married and it was on this Greek island, and my wife and I went. And it was like a week and everybody was there. And you know what it's like when there's lots of people. You don't have any time to yourself, you know. So one day we hired these like quad bikes, a few of us. My wife and I, we just head off on this quad bike. And I don't know if you know Greek islands, but generally they've got these beautiful, beautiful beaches. Then you'll go up over a hill, back down, and there'll be another beautiful beach. And this sort of circles the whole island. So we did this. We went up over the hill, down near these stunning views. And there was this restaurant that was like out over the water. So there was like a rock, like a rockery bridge to walk over to it. You walked over to it.
Oh, wow.
It's all overhanging the water. And they just, you know, there's no menus there. They just bring out whatever. And we had this massive like platter of seafood. And, you know, clearly just been caught there because you see all the fishing boats there as well. And I just mentioned like the smell of things. When I think of it now, I can still, you know, almost hear the birds and, you know, smell it all. It was so sort of visceral, all of your senses, you know. And yeah, those are the best meals for me, where all of your senses just overtaken. It's not just the food. And I couldn't tell you exactly what it was on the seafood platter, but it was just the whole experience, you know, just beautiful.
I tell you, I mean, if you want to keep going with this, I used to go fishing with three friends of mine. We used to go trout fishing not too far, about 2 hours west of here is some of the best trout fishing of all time. And we did a lot of fly fishing, so we would go up for a couple of days, and we would go in, you know, waders and backpacks and stuff, and we'd camp, and then we would hike up onto this, you know, almost like an island. Like, you'd hike over this river to the island, and then we start a fire, and then we break out the, you know, beer, and then we break out like sausages and stuff like that, and we would have this, you know, we were sitting on this island and just in the middle of this river and just eating together and laughing and telling jokes and drinking beer, and it was amazing. It was just like, oh, that shit is the fucking best.
Yeah.
Yeah, good friends, good times, that's what it's all about. Okay, let's do another question. Mareko, do you want to take the one from Nav Singh?
Yeah, this one is from Nav Singh. He says, hey, fellas, just started listening after watching you doing DCI and really enjoyed this show. Impressive, since I've never really gotten into podcasts. Had a question. Have you ever talked about sharpening? But from knife owner's perspective, whetstones are the tried and true standard, but I stumbled across the Worksharp Ken Onion with a blade grinding attachment that can go to 10 degrees. Kitchen Knife Forums has pretty limited commentary on it, and the Reddit Chef Knives section has varying opinions. Would be interested to hear from a maker's perspective if this has validity or just shut up and stick to water stones. Okay. So, are you guys familiar with that? What is that, the Ready Sharp?
No. I haven't seen one of them. No.
What is it?
No. It's like it's kind of like a, or is it Bill Sharp? Bill Sharp. Ready Sharp. I can't remember. No, it's not Bill Sharp.
No.
That's fucking Adam, right?
It's not Adam. Yeah.
Okay. It's a tiny little mobile sharpening system. It's used for either personal setup, or I've seen people set up professional deals for using these for sharpening. I think they're an interesting concept, but I think they lack some things that allow somebody who is completely new to knife sharpening, like the level of consistency that I think you would want, because you basically still have to do everything freehand. And if you have zero experience, it's very easy to mess that up. Again, I think they're a neat idea, but I don't think they're perfect. I think whetstones is a strong move, especially if you're new to sharpening, because it removes material so slowly. With grinders, you can really fuck up a knife in half a second, and you just can't do that with knife sharpening. So, sharpening on stones. So, but what I've gotten to in this point in my career is I start on a machine. I use my 2x72, and with that broadback, with the long platen especially, it's really helpful for getting. I like line the blade vertically up with the cutting edge. With the platen, and I sharpen at, you know, approximately 10-15 degree angle on both sides, and then I go from the broadback to some sharpening stones to finish the sharpening process, and I get really consistent, really phenomenal results. But before I, you know, started using the machine, I was only doing stone, and it takes time, but honestly, again, especially if you're new, it's hard to mess things up on a stone, and it's really, really easy to not only grind away maybe way too much material, or get the angle wrong or whatever on a grinder, but it's, if you're not familiar with it, it's easy to overheat the steel too and ruin the heat treat. And with a wet stone, that's not going to happen.
Well, he's talking about it from a non-knife maker standpoint, like a customer.
Point of view.
So
yeah, I would suggest customers, and if they're really into it, try to get stones. But if you're not, just find a professional sharpener. But if you really want to figure it out, I think stones is the way. And again, it's because it removes material so slowly, and it's hard to screw up the heat treat and remove too much material or any of that kind of weird stuff. Stones is a pretty safe way to do it.
What do you think of like those Lansky systems and that kind of thing where it's, you know, a set that you can set the angle of where the stones are. So you're not like, I think that's the biggest fear a lot of people have is that, you know, maybe you have a nice Damascus knife and then maybe your angle isn't right. And then you're going to put a big ass scratch in your knife. And those Lansky systems where it's like you set angle.
You clamp the knife.
Yeah, you clamp the knife and then it has like a
rod that you...
There's a number of different ones that I know a lot of people, a lot of knife makers use because you do get the exact angle and it's still the kind of whetstones.
Absolutely. Actually, yeah. I think those are great.
Yeah, I've got a Lansky set myself and I think if the bevel's already been set, obviously, because these are end users, not makers. So the bevel's obviously already been set. So they're great for that kind of thing and you know, touching things up. But personally, I'd say it's more about education so they don't get to the point where they need a full sharpen.
Right.
So I've talked about it a lot in the past, but, you know, I've got this... I've got a huge rod, ladies and gentlemen. but it's like a 2-3-inch thick...
Holy
maybe 12 inches long ceramic rod. And... Just touching the blade up on that occasionally, it just keeps things razor sharp. So it's about making sure it doesn't get to the point where it actually needs a sharpen. You just hone in the edge each time.
Yep.
But, you know, I can't see many people at home having, you know, like a Lansky system, which they're going to clip onto their bench and they're going to, you know, not, you know, most people are not going to be doing that. So, yeah, maybe get one of those, you know, one of those King stones, you know, where there's maybe 500 on one side and 1,000 on the other.
Do you think that most people, when they say, I want a knife with good edge retention, most of them are talking about the fact that they're not willing to maintain a knife anyway? Like, because what Craig is saying Craig is saying is true. I mean, I have knives that I haven't brought back to the shop once in years, and I just, I give them a lick on the ceramic rod, and I'm getting great performance. I'm cutting paper. You know, it's like, it seems as though I think a lot of people are, they don't understand that, you know, here's a good example. Losing weight is hard when you're just like over the end. Like if you need to lose, if you're used to, you know, exercising or doing that stuff, it's easier to do. But if you have to start from zero, it's hard. Same thing with, you know, sharpening a knife. If you've turned it into a dull edge, it's obviously going to be harder than if you're right in there, you know, or close.
Yeah. So to me, it's all about sort of maintaining your edges as opposed to sharpening. But, you know, there's going to be cases where people need to resharpen. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
And as Mareko said, maybe take it to a professional. I can't see many people getting these like sharpening systems, as they call them, home. Really.
I've heard customers of mine say they have like the Wicked Edge or what, all those expensive things. And if you're going to use stones and you're worried that you're going to fuck it up, why not get something with like a jig or a guide on it? I don't have a problem with that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially
if you might now do a machine, which they say is for home and sort of, you know, kitchen use. Which is just a smaller version of their normal sort of Tormek sharpening systems. But I think it's got like an aluminium and diamond wheel on it. Never used one. I wonder whether, you know, that kind of thing could be quite nice to have in a kitchen. It depends how serious people want to take their knives, I suppose.
Sure.
There you go.
Okay, well, we mentioned Broadback then and their long platen, the Mareko long platen. What else are they doing? They must sell grinders, surely.
Yeah, they sell Broadback Ironworks sells awesome grinders, 2x72 grinders, knife makers making grinders for other knife makers. And that's the kind of person that you want. You want people who are, they know what you need. And one of the intuitive things about the guys at Broadback are because they're, you know, Vincent and Ryan make beautiful knives, so they know what they need or they know what they want. I actually just used, they sent me the Integral Platen, and I used it, and it's great, and it's really helpful. It was helpful to get into certain places, and I use all the parts, and if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and put in promo code KNIFETALK, you can upgrade to the Mareko Platen, which is a very, very, very good deep platen to get you get you squared away with your handles on both sides without having to bump into the arm. And they do a great job. So definitely go get yourself that Broadbeck Ironworks. And if you don't have, if you have something like something different, their attachments will most likely retrofit into your chassis. So go get yourself that BroadbeckIronworks.com. Put in promo code Knife Talk because they've already knocked down the price and get yourself that Mareko Platin.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Where are we?
Minuteman EDC.
Yes. Hey guys, I got a question. I'm trying to step up my game. I just ordered some Parks 50 from Texas Ferris Supply, and I've been trying to find info on it. Like, do I need to heat it up before heat treating, or any other tips, any suggestions? Thanks, and love the show. Oils, heating up oils. It's going to depend on the steel, I'd have thought. I don't go crazy with oils. I generally make sure that they're warm, so you know the viscosity changes in oils and all that kind of thing. We went into this in massive detail when we had Dr. Laren Thomas on the show.
For sure.
And he wrote the book on heat treating. So get yourself the book. That'll be a massive help. But generally, Parks 50, what are you guys doing?
Well, it usually comes with the paperwork. The paperwork gives you some ideas of what the tips are. Like, how warm it should be. So, I mean, what is it? Like,
read the paper.
Was it? No, I mean, obviously I'm just like, yeah, go buy the, it's like around 100 degrees. You want it like 100 degrees, somewhere that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it operates between 50 to 100 degrees is kind of like, or maybe it's 120 maximum or 110 max. I personally like it to be a little bit on the warmer side, probably maybe around 80 or 90 when I'm doing my heat treat, because the steels that I'm working with and making my Damascus, they kind of require a faster quench. And that's part of the reason you're using the Parks 50 anyways. I mean, you can use Parks 50 for getting a good hamon. The key is that you're matching the steel with the kind of oil, because Parks 50, like, for example, would not necessarily be great for ADCRV2 or 52-100 or Crewforge V or some of these other steels that require actually a little bit of a slower quench. And you might think, oh, I'll just quench with the oil cooler and that'll slow down. But it's still too fast. It would probably still be too fast for that particular steel. And you would want then at that point like a Parks AAA, which is a slower quenching oil. And that oil has an operating range of around 120 to like 140 or so. And, you know, if you're doing, like Jeff and Craig both do batches, you also got to think about maybe having extra containers, because it's easy to pump that temperature up over outside of that operating range within one or two blades getting quenched. But with Parks 50, there's got to be some information out there. I'm just looking online real quick.
There's other knife supply company. I know that I think USA Knife Maker has a breakdown on the what Parks.
Oh yeah, they have a sheet right there. Yeah,
it's USA Knife Maker has a breakdown of what each oil is good for. Like, I know that AAA, I use AAA for 52-100, and then any of the 10 series, I use Parks 50. But
sure.
And USA Knife Maker has a breakdown of all the oils and which steels you should be using.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking at it right there.
Do you know, we did that sort of heat treat special. We had Dr. Laren Thomas on, and he answered so many like great questions, and he was so knowledgeable about it. Just thinking now, looking back at Nav Singh's question about sharpening, we've never really had anybody on who's sort of an expert in sharpening. I'm sure I could learn lots from it. I think it would be good. Maybe we get somebody on and do like a sharpening special.
Well, I talked to Kasumi Kev, like a year and a half ago. I did a one-off episode, just me and him. We dove into sharpening a bit there. I don't think it's a terrible thing to revisit for sure. And I think also it'd be great to get Larry back.
As, you know,
I got questions.
And people
can
send any questions beforehand and bill it as a sharpening special.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
If you've got any sharpening questions, we'll try and cover them all in this one episode kind of thing.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, but I mean, we could also call, we could see if we could get the guy who hacked Kasumi Kev's Instagram. We could probably get him on. fucking poor Kasumi Kev got hacked, and he's some guys got his Instagram page and selling Bitcoin, trying to sell Bitcoin. So maybe we get him on, talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'd love to get Larry Thomas back. And we try to have him on. I mean, I think he still listens to this. He goes on other people's podcasts. I invited him on. He said he was, you know, too busy hiking around the woods with his family or something like that. But, you know, this is it. Larry, come on anytime. You got an open invite.
There we go. Shall we call that a show?
Well,
what do you think?
I mean, we could say a few nice words of thanks and stuff like that. And what's going on? What do we expect for the world, right?
Do you guys have any resolutions that you set for yourselves?
Resolutions. This is our first show since New Year, isn't
That's
it?
Right.
I keep forgetting. Yeah. I don't have resolutions myself this year as such, but just more things that I want to sort of achieve. So these aren't behaviors that I need to sort of abide by, but just these are goals that I want to have, you know, I suppose. Yeah, I do, but... yeah, no resolutions to set.
Well, so spill it. You can fart in more jars. What do you talk? Come on, man.
Yeah, you could become the next fartrepreneur.
Yeah. I tell you what. It's mainly about sort of more personal stuff, I suppose. So, I mean, like people know, I started the band this year and all that kind of thing. So there's a few things we want to record. You know, like an EP. You know, 4 or 5 songs, original songs in a proper studio. None of these like home studio things. And just have like a week away in a studio. I think it'd just be pretty cool. Really want to play a festival too, which would be really cool, playing with lots of other bands. When it comes to sort of work-wise stuff, I want to have, you know, stock that is finished here so people can go online and buy it and, you know, it's ready to go, you know? That would save a lot of sort of stresses. Yeah. As I said, they're not sort of behavioral resolutions as most people's are, you know, give up drinking and all these kinds of things. Life's too short.
You'll never give that up. Come on.
More.
Yeah, seriously.
I drink so little now. Maybe 2 or 3 times a week I'll have like one drink. You know, 2 is, you know, pushing the boat out. I don't go crazy. But, yeah, I mean, you know, most resolutions are sort of behavior-based, aren't they? You know, I need to stop doing this or I need to be better at this. And mine are more sort of goals-based, I suppose. But what about you guys? Mareko, have you got any burning ambitions or...
Burning ambitions.
Resolutions.
One of my big issues that I'm trying to work through is I struggle with perfectionism. And it's been, I've come to realize, like, it's been a lifelong thing. And, perfectionism at first blush, maybe doesn't sound like a horrible thing to care about, but it's really not been great for me. And I've been trying to figure it out over the last couple months, really, since I've kind of identified this, and just trying to be, I guess it manifests in a very negative way when I'm fucking hard as fuck on myself for like the stupidest shit that doesn't even matter. And so it's a combination of getting over perfectionism and trying to be a little, just being kinder to myself and forgiving, I guess, of myself, to remember that I'm just a person like everybody else and I make mistakes. The key is to pay attention, take notes, and try to learn from those mistakes and let the lesson pass, instead of just, because I have a tendency of continuously just beating myself up about everything. So that's something I'd really like to get over, because it hasn't been great for me operating in that manner. The other stuff, I mean, the other big one is we want to, as a family, we have a family goal to take a out-of-state vacation outside of Washington State. We've done a little bit of traveling in the state in the last year, but we haven't really gone anywhere before the pandemic, you know, we were traveling around a lot. Part of that was because we lived in Connecticut and family was in Washington, so we traveled back and forth. But we're talking about getting together a nice long road trip, probably at least a couple weeks, down through Oregon, down to California. We my wife has very good friends that live down in California, down in Southern California, go visit them and go check out and do lots of side trips and like go check out the La Brea tar pits and visit family and just see like interesting things in the redwoods and old growth forests and stuff like that along the way, as well as visiting, you know, knife making friends who are along the path. And then the last one is I really need to bump up my physical activity. I'm not trying to like get into marathon shape like Mr. Jeff Fader, but I really need to do something more than kind of the knife making, sedentary knife making program that I've been on for a while, standing at a grinder or sitting at a workbench. And I made a goal to do like 30 minutes three times a week, which sounds pretty simple and basic to start with, but I know myself, and I to go back to my perfectionism, I really struggle with setting goals in the first place because I struggle just like most people to keep up with them, but I take it really hard and I feel like a huge fucking failure when I don't do things, and so I've to make that goal a little bit more less intimidating for me, I've committed to doing 10 minutes three times a week, but knowing myself that 10 minutes it's the initiation action. I have a hard time starting, but once I get started, then I can fucking go, and so I need that to be a little bit less intimidating and kind of, at least for now, play some mind games with myself and say, oh, I only got to do 10 minutes. But I'm pretty confident that 10 minutes easily, if I want it to, will go another 20, 30, you know, 40 minutes to get some good reps in, and just bring more activity into my life. Because I do feel myself as I get older. I'll be 38 this year, slowing down. And it's kind of fucking lame because I've been super active and athletic most of my life. And it's been in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years that's really slowed down. And so I want to get back to it.
I found from sort of 20s through the 30s, it hits hard and it hits fast.
Yeah,
that whole sort of the metabolism changes quickly. You know, it's like, fuck. And it's just much harder to change his shape and all the rest of it. Yeah, difficult.
I
Jeffrey, what's the big goal? So
I don't do resolutions because I made a decision to, you know, be as healthy as I can be, and things are going in good shape. In regards to what you were saying, Recco, the beginning is always the hardest, but the key is you just have to do it and not think about it, because the first bit of it sucks. I've been doing, and I've said it a million times, you know, sick of it. I've been doing Peloton. The only, I've missed three.
Wait a second.
Do
you have a Peloton?
I'm telling you, I missed 3 days since I got it in September. I've only missed 3 days.
Wow.
2 days from Maker's Camp, and then one day in the beginning when I thought I shouldn't keep doing it every day. I do it every fucking day at 6 a.m. And I tell you what, and it's in stone, and I feel amazing afterwards, and I'm soaking wet, and I feel tons of energy. It's always hard in the beginning, and you just got to do it. And otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to sit in your chair and flip through, you know, for 30 minutes on Instagram? Fuck that. So the key is to just do it and just not think about it. Just do it, take care of it, and then you'll feel better about yourself doing it. That's all I have to say. But I want to get back. I got to go back to my doctor, and I want to let him have it, because he told me the last time I saw him that I'm too big to run again. And I ran the New York City Marathon, and I was definitely too big. It killed my knees. When I'm 50, my wife and I are going to both, she just turned 48. We're both going to do the marathon together at 50, and I'm going to feel good the whole time. That's all I care about. The time, I want to do better than last time, but I want to feel good doing it. So, boom.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. Can anybody do the marathon now?
Well,
The London Marathon, you've got to apply, and there's like they say, like less than 20% will actually get the chance to do it.
It's a huge production because there's lotteries. We used to be members of the Roadrunners Club, where you could, if you did 9 races in a year, the next year you got an instant ticket.
You got a spot.
We used to go do that. I loved the New York City. I know, love the Roadrunners Club, because you ran in Central Park, and it was just such a great environment to run in, and the greatest city in the world. And it is hard to get into it. But what you can do is what I did the last time was I joined the Michael J. Fox Foundation and I had to raise $3,000. And I have a friend who's on the board there. So I told my wife, I'm like, we'll run the marathon. You might have to raise some money, but we're going to run the marathon. So we're both shooting for when we turn 50 to be in that shit and you know, nice. Be obnoxious. It'll be great. Can't wait. I can't wait. I love long distance running is the best. It's like, it's very meditative and you do get like this moment where your waist keeps going. If you focus on your breathing and all of a sudden you look down and you don't feel your lower half and you're, you know, it's, you're in like this kind of like weird, very, very weird space that I've just really, really like. So that's what I want to do.
Before we had the twins, I had a couple of years of doing like 10Ks, 20Ks, that kind of thing. And I loved it. Like you said, you get into this flow state after a while. After maybe sort of 5-6 miles.
Yeah, that's right.
The pain goes and then you're just in it.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's this bizarre feeling. Yeah. It's very, very, I understand there is like this kind of transcendental meditation thing going on. The half marathon.
Is that the runner's high I hear about?
Yeah. I mean, there are moments when I was training for the marathon, it's a huge amount of time spent training. You can't just like, you have a very specific schedule. And I had like 3 or 4 months of like, I would have like one day off a week and it was short runs during the week and then really long runs during the weekends to the point where you're like, you're gone for like 3 hours running and it's just like 4 hours running. It's just like, it is a total time commitment, but it was great. I mean, I loved it. And you do get like this, actually the funny thing is I was, when I would do anything over 17 miles, I was awful for the rest of the day to the point where Hillary would like not let, we couldn't go to people's houses because I was like unbearable. I was unbearable. She was
grumpy.
Can we get invited to things? We can really, we can't. Why not? Jeff's just ran 17 miles and he's going to be a piece of shit. So you can't go anywhere. But running's the best. I love it.
Cool. So that's the big goal, to get fit.
Well, I mean, we're there. I mean, I've got 15 more pounds to go before I can feel good in terms of getting in more running shape.
15 pounds.
I can do long distance.
What will 15 pounds put you at?
I mean, I want 205.
Wow.
200, 205. That's where I want to go. 205.
So how much have you lost?
Since the biggest I was 250, and now I'm down to 216, 217 after holiday. So
when were you 250?
It was a couple years ago. I was hitting 250, and then at the height of pandemic, I was around 250, 230, 235, 250.
Wow.
So I dropped a lot. It was good. It feels great. It feels good. I feel really good.
I believe it.
Wife looks at me different.
Good for you.
Wife looks all... you know what I said to her? I'm like, does the penis look longer? And she goes, why? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I said, the penis looks bigger. That's good enough for me. So lose the weight. The penis gets bigger. So
you still haven't got to the point where you can see your own penis yet.
I've gotten to the point where I see penis. The move is you look straight down. You see penis before you see toes, not stomach before penis before toes. So I'm
there
at penis,
that's
toes. That's good enough for me.
Yeah. So.
Last thing I just want to say, one last thing is, as a community, you know, we talk about the importance of the community. Our friends at New Jersey Steel Barons just lost one of their family. Brandy Coughlin was one of the people who worked. She took the phone calls. She dealt with a lot of the customers. She was a huge part of the New Jersey Steel Baron company. And I sent a message to Pete, and they're devastated. I mean, the New Jersey Steel Baron is a very, very small organization, and they're family. They know each other. So I just want to send my greatest feelings towards, you know, our deepest condolences to the New Jersey Steel Baron and Pete and everybody there. So sending our regards. And at some point they're going to try to do something for an organization that she's involved with. So we're going to do that.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right. So ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. Because Craig fucking fell off. He's too busy jarring farts. He's too busy jarring farts. He brewing one up and he turned the fucking camera off.
So I guess this is the after show.
Just to make things clear, I wasn't jarring farts. I had a power cut, and it cut the recording, and it cut the whole thing. So we're very sorry. We shall speak to you again next Monday. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice value packs of T-bone steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon, limit five. Then buy one, get one free on select varieties of Entenmann's, Wonder Bread, or Vita Coco water, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.